have Dr. Aletta Frazier-Tucker, both of whom are participating in a new program, a relatively new program in Racine County called Bridging the Gap, that has begun as a creative way in which to come up with temporary housing for children in need of longer-term foster care. And for those of you who are listening and who may not be aware, the need for foster care has been an emerging problem all around Wisconsin, but definitely in Racine County. Every year, the need for placing more and more children seems to be happening, and somewhere around 600 children every year are placed in foster homes or temporary care waiting for a foster home in our community, in the wider county community. It's been such a problem that about 100 or more children every year end up getting placed in temporary homes outside of Racine County because we don't have enough solutions to be able to offer them a comforting, safe, loving environment in which they can continue to thrive and regroup, which prompts a lot of problems within a child's life. So I'm going to be turning our program over to the two of you this morning who can shed some wonderful light on the situation. So good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'll start with asking, what motivated you to do this? And you could kind of take that time to describe to us how you are participating in Bridging the Gap. And we'll start with whomever wants to start. We'll just use that as a jumping off point for both of you, and we'll go back and forth with some more questions as we learn more. So who would like to start us off?
I can start us off. I'm Lisa Hill Driver. I am the founder of Lisa's Land of Love Receiving Home for children in need of protective services. My inspiration spurred back many, many years ago. I've been a treatment foster parent for teenage boys for the last 25 plus years. One of my things that just sticks to my heart is just a simple scripture that says, faith, hope, and love, but the greatest of these is love. And I've learned down through the years that loving on these children has been more beneficial, I think, for me than even the children that I've raised down through the years. Lisa's Land of Love is a unique shelter in the state of Wisconsin. We started trying to keep siblings. Our focus was on keeping, the vision was on keeping siblings together. So our license extends from 0 to age 17. So our facility has nurseries and everything to take. If you can keep the siblings together, you allow easier visitation and the hopes of quicker reunification of family.
Which is the end goal.
Yes.
Right. And Arletta, what about you?
I actually started at a request for my husband. He was the one a couple of years ago, probably even longer than that, when our son was getting ready to graduate from high school, whom I adopted. Out of the foster care system in Kenosha County, he just said, you know what, we should do a group home with our home because my son was going off to college and we had this big old house. And at the time, I was working on my dissertation and I told him absolutely not because I knew the work that it would take into putting a group home together and then also being able to provide the best quality of services to kids that who utilize that group home. So it came from Myron, and then we kind of just moved along with doing it. He actually came up with a name called Peace of Mind, and the reason why he wanted to call it Peace of Mind because he wanted kids to be able to come into the home and have a peace of mind as it relates to the situation that they're currently in with their family. Our home serves children ages 10 to 17. We serve kids who are from the foster care system but also from the juvenile justice system as well as we do respite as well. So, and we serve the whole entire family in our home. So when the child is placed with us, they stay with us, but the families do have to be involved. And as Lisa said, the whole goal is to be able to reunify these families together and getting them to being able to provide good care to their children.
Right. So how long have each of you had your homes or your shelters in place?
I didn't open up until November 2nd.
Of just this last year, right?
Yes, just this past November of 2018. I actually got licensed on that day, and then I took the first child in on November 19th.
And do you have any residents right now?
I do.
Okay. And you, how many children can you accommodate?
I can accommodate 6 children in our home, even though we have 4 bedrooms, but we have to have an egress window in our basement in order for them to count that space, the state. So, and due to that, we can only take 6 children.
Okay. And Lisa, what about you?
We are able to take 8 at this time.
And you've been around?
September 1st is when we opened.
Oh, goodness. Okay, so relatively new experiences.
Yes.
And Lisa, you had mentioned to me that you have 7 children.
Yes, we do.
So you're near capacity. And Arletta, how many children do you have in your care right now?
We're down to 2 now. We have one more that's leaving on Monday, and then we have another one that should be going home soon. But we've had a total of about 7 kids as well.
Goodness. So,
six kids.
Okay. In the short few months that you've been doing this work, what do you think has been the most profound understanding that you have to date about the situation that these children are involved in?
Well, I think that one of the main issues is limited support to the whole entire family. I think even though when they leave our homes, if they go back home or if they go into foster care, the issue is still relies back to the family. These kids want to be at home, and most of the families want to be with their children. However, there's a lot of services that need to be in place that wraps around the whole entire family to make that happen. And one of the things I have learned in this short couple months is the 30 days is just not enough. Even, you know, with an extension, it's just not enough to serve the whole entire family.
And you, Lisa?
Our focus is family-centered. However, in the environment of the shelter, in those 30 to 60 days, I think children need to know and understand that they're loved. And when trauma's in play and families are broken, children need to come to a place where they can receive that wholesome feeling of family. And my staff is like an intergenerational, so I have grandmas and different age groups that all play a different role in the life of children and that nurturing process.
Sure. So now you both have mentioned some very interesting points here. One, in a seeming lack of broad-based services for the whole family in Racine County so that we can equip a family to find their grounding faster and be reunited faster. And then just a need to love children who have mm-hmm. experienced trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And trauma is becoming something that I think community-wide we are more aware of and its ramifications in the lives of children in particular. And perhaps most of our listeners are not aware of what happens to a child who is placed in foster care. So, and that alone can be traumatic. So maybe we can spend just a few minutes talking about what kinds of circumstances bring children to your doors that you've experienced in our community, and then what kind of trauma is attached to that experience or to what they've endured so far. So if you could maybe shed some light on that for us, we'd appreciate it.
You can go ahead, Lisa.
Okay. I'm not sure there is an order or a set thing that says trauma. Trauma can be different at the various ages of the children that we serve. While a teenager might be distant or kind of set apart because of the situation, when you're dealing with the younger children, it's a lot of emotions. You disconnected them from mother. And again, in order to deal with that, like I said, certain pieces have to be in play. So for that small baby or the young children, you have that emotional connection to a grandmother. that for some means nothing, but it's always been my belief that we're in the trouble that we're in now with our children because we lost strong pieces like grandmothers and aunts and the support system that made us who we are today. These children don't necessarily have that. And hurting people hurt people. I think we just need to, you know, to make that point clear that hurting people hurt people. So when you find a child that's hurting, again, my biggest responsibility is to nurture, to counsel, to try to give them some sense of hope in the situation that they're in. We won't be able to fix it in the window of time that we have. But I'm a strong believer. There was this song that says, if I can help somebody as I travel on my way, then my living will not be in vain. And again, that's a premise that I try to, you know, instill in my staff and help them to understand some of what these children are going through and have been through. And, you know, for me, my past experiences, I would take children right out of Wells, young men out of Wells and Ethan Allen, and I found out that the thing that they're lacking is structure, love, and somebody to pay them some attention, to really listen to their hearts. And those pieces work for me down through the years. And so that's kind of how the premise that I keep moving forward in.
So you're mentioning that in the past and maybe mm-hmm. still present, you're dealing with some children or you've dealt with some children who also have gone through adjudication, right? Mm-hmm. They've been in the juvenile detention system. And so that prompts all kinds of questions and needs that they might have.
Sure.
So somebody coming from Wales is coming from a juvenile detention center.
Exactly.
And they come with all kinds of needs that are pretty widespread.
Sure.
Arletta, what about you? What have you found in need, people are in need of when they land on your doorstep?
Well, I think they're in need of basically what Lisa was saying, that relationship piece. You know, where what research is showing is that, you know, for the healing of trauma is relationships, and they need to have consistent relationships. When they come in, some kids have been in four places when they get to us, 1-6 places. And where is that relationship that's going to be developed? And then when they move away from us and they have established relationships with staff, now they got to start all over again. Now the trauma starts all over again for them. So I think the biggest thing that we're seeing is that piece of being able to have more of a consistency with the relationship for the kids to help them get through the trauma. And that includes even working with the parents and being able to help them develop what relationship looks like from a parent's role and what your child or your children need.
So when a child appears on your doorstep, what have they just been through in order to be there? I mean, there are some wonderful glimpses of the life of children in need of foster care on the Racine County Human Services website. There are some films that describe what they go through. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes they're removed from their home or the circumstances with their family or the adult or whomever, whose ever care they had been in previously, and all of their belongings that they can mm-hmm. fit in a garbage bag go with them, and that's how they wind up on your doorstep, which I think in itself causes all kinds of trauma in the life of a child.
Mm-hmm.
They may not return to the school that they're used to. They might end up having to change schools in the process, and they probably have all kinds of questions about when's the next time they get to see their parent or whomever's been caring for them. So how do you help mitigate that? What are some, you know, actual strategic actions that happen once a child arrives at your door? What are some of the first things that you do?
Comforting words. You need to comfort mm-hmm. a child in pain. The other thing is, of course, there's paperwork and some things that need to be done on the front end, but the ability to sit down and just simply let them know that they are going to be okay. In our facility, we do the visits, home visits, so parents can come and do the visitation there, supervised visits. We just assure them that through this process, that things are going to be okay. We can't fix it, you know, as we said. But I think the greatest joy for that child after being there a couple of days, when they come in, their eyes are dim. You know, the light is out. They're lost. But if you get the experience of seeing the light come back on, or just that glimmer of hope in the eyes of the children, you feel like however many days you have, it was well worth it.
Right. And I agree with Lisa. It really is all about your approach with them and approach with the family, because we have mostly dealt with kids who are in the juvenile justice system. We do have an LCSW that's on staff that also provides mediation within that 30 days with the family, if that's an option for them to go home and being able to go. And the family comes to the shelter, or either we go to the home to do the mediation services to help reunify that relationship back with the family. But I agree with Lisa. They want to see their family. We want them to see their family, but we also want them to see their family in a more healthier way. And what does that look like with that family? How should that be? And so that LCSW, the licensed clinical social worker, she provides the direction to the family, to the parents, and to the youth, you know, on the communication, and expressing how I feel. You know, and again, we have a very short time to plant the seed and to connect them to the resources so they can continue to work them on their own. With these families that come to us. But I agree, the comforting words is a key thing, that approach.
So you both mentioned a limited time frame in which that you work with the children that come to your door. Is 30 days, 30 to 60 days, the limit?
By state law, it is the limit.
Yes.
And is that because you're both running temporary shelters?
Because we're running shelters. Group homes and shelters are two separate things. Group homes are more long-term. And if I'm not mistaken, there's some changes and stuff going on with the state even concerning mm-hmm. that. But the shelter care is just what it says. It's shelter and in between, which gives the county time to find placement for these children, a more permanent placement or reunification.
So then what does that – it brings up a couple questions for me. One, Arletta, you talked a little bit about mediation services. Mm-hmm. Maybe you could explain that more to us who are not in the social work setting. And then after that, I'd be interested in what you do to prepare children who have just come to you for yet another placement, hopefully, as you've mentioned, either back with their family, but it may very well be to – a long-term situation in a mm-hmm. in a foster home. So how do you prepare them for that transition? I guess those two things I'd be interested to know more about.
Well, our mediation services, it starts immediately. Our staff is called youth success coaches. So the whole thing, because we're dealing with older kids, the whole thing is that we're there to coach, and we have to keep in mind that they are going to leave us. And some of them, you know, most of the kids we have gotten have been 14 and up. So that means that we don't know which direction that they may be going, so we have to make sure we're coaching them with some life skills as well. So some of the mediation is connecting them with mentors to be able to provide them with support even after they leave. We had one kid that left us on January 4th, and we was able to even get him a job. He had just turned 17. He's still working, and he's working with his mentor, and they're working. The mentor works with the whole family, get him to work. When there's issues that rise, because he's back at home, and in case you know, at that age, 17, for any of us who were raised teenagers, we know that, you know, they know everything, you know, and we know absolutely
right.
Nothing, you know. So that mentor is there to just provide that guidance, to give that parent a deep breath, okay, and what's the best approach? Because we know you love your child, we know he loves you, but how do you need to communicate with each other? So that's what I mean by that mediation, is teaching those skills on both ends, so that child will not reenter back into the system. Now, some cases has not been that successful, but a few of our cases have been, as long as we can maintain some of those services that are going in after the fact when the child leaves as well. I hope that answered your question.
Well, it's a good start. Lisa, did you have something you want to add to that?
And I guess I need to make something clear. We do not do the correction piece. We do Children in Need of Protective Services. We do CHIP only, and then respite for situations that just you might have a child that's already placed in a foster home, but there might be some issues and there needs to be that separation for that while. So in that while, we begin to talk and work with the child. Sometime that parent does come in and I'll sit in the office and try to get a feel of what direction I need to go concerning that child. So the correction piece does not play in with us. So it's the trauma and the ability to make them feel comfortable through the process and a sense of knowing that everything is going to be okay. And we do talk to them about, you know, if the placement is not going to be back at home, we try to prepare them for that.
I'd like to remind you that you're listening to WGTD Radio and this morning's Community Matters. My name is Laura Sumner Kuhn. I'm your host with our guests today, Dr. Arletta Frazier-Tucker and Lisa Hill-Driver, who are involved in Bridging the Gap, kind of a creative way to find a solution for problems for finding more foster care or temporary care for children in need of foster care. One of the things I'd like to do, I think I'm going to break for a minute because I'm getting ambient noise. Are you getting that from Arletta? Are you?
2, 1.
Okay, so it sounds as though we have two groups of children who have a need for temporary placement. One might be that they are removed from their family homes and there is no foster care available for them immediately, and they need a temporary shelter until one is found. And then there are children who have been in the juvenile detention system because of their behavior, oftentimes as a result of what's going on at home. And maybe you could speak a little bit, the two of you, to what you're seeing in the wider Racine community that prompts those situations.
For dealing with the CHIPS children, and I'm speaking broad and past history and a lot of things, a lot of times there's some form of abuse or neglect that takes place. So it can be physical, it could be emotional, it could be no food, it could be the housing situation is not appropriate for the children. It could be lack of getting their children back and forth to school and missing out on the important things of the life in the life of a child. So those are some of the things that you would see come through the door at Lisa's Land of Love. It's more the abuse and things of that nature that we try to service.
Okay. And I know, Arletta, we're catching you on the road, so our listeners mm-hmm. might hear a little noise in the background. And
I know.
And that's just the way of, you know, what happens when you have a complicated, busy life, right? So we'll talk right over that. But maybe you could describe, too, your experience there, Arletta.
Well, we're finding more, especially with our delinquents, with families have been using drugs. The reason why some of the abuse has occurred because their parents were drug users, and so adequate care was not given to the child, and we're finding that they're angry for that reason. Or domestic violence. We did have one child that came in for domestic violence, and the mother, like she said, I stayed in there too long, and so the child is extremely angry as well as relates to what he's seen in the home and what he's experienced in the home when it came around to the abuse.
So I would imagine this is a difficult issue when the goal is to reunite children with their families, but then I would suspect, I mean, that's a long road, and in the meantime, you need to negotiate what would be good and healing visits with their families in the meantime. I would think that can be somewhat frustrating at times. Do you mm-hmm. have instances where you need to help a child recover when a family visit that they've anticipated doesn't happen? What's the fallout from some of that as you're waiting for the parent also to heal?
The children become very disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
Through that process. But we also need to state that a lot of the programming and the visits and those things, we're not in control of that. Each of these children have a social worker, someone from Racine County, and we take a lot of directive from them as to some of the things that we need to do concerning visits, medical checkups, a lot of things. We work hand-in-hand with Racine County on these issues.
Yes. And then some of the kids, when their parents don't show up, for us, we've seen an escalate of anger.
Sure.
You know, of letdown. I feel that you weren't there for me. You know, why? You know, now here we go again. She didn't come, you know, or he didn't come. We had one child that was in our system that actually, he was, father was in jail. And so dad got out of jail, and they didn't even know how, you know, how do you greet each other? How do you work with each other? You know, and how do you address that anger when you've been away from this child's life for almost 2 years? You know, and then, you know, dealing with that anger. And then this child's going back home with you. How do you deal with that? So when they, you know, when parents don't follow through, it does affect. And sometimes we see it in the shelter. But I will say majority of our, I would say probably about 99% of our families, they did follow, you know, they would show up when they say that they were going to show up, even if we had to pick them up ourselves.
And Lisa, you bring up a good point that this is a partnership with the county.
Correct.
So what kind of services does the county provide aside from a social worker? Do they have a network of,
yes,
of resources that they refer you to or that they put in place for each child that you kind of navigate?
Yeah, there are certain steps. Once a child is placed, there are certain steps that need to take place. Again, partnering with the county, making sure health assessments and other things are being done, and that social worker works hand in hand with you on that situation. Yeah.
Yeah.
Are there?
And we have the same thing. We actually have a social worker on staff as well that will work with the county worker on what's needed for the child because, you know, although we have a partnership with Racine County, but there are some things that are laid in our lap that we have to get taken care of and that we have to do as well for the child and for the family too. And we get the information and we gather it from Racine County and then we put a plan in place. And that MSW goes out and she takes care of making sure that these things are done for the family and the child.
Right. Do you both have talked about staffs that you use in your facilities and in your programs. Can you describe the kind of support staff that you that you use in order to provide the care for children in your custody?
Yep. You can go ahead, Lisa.
Yes.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. We have on board a social work, my past experiences in social work and doing social work as well, and some counseling and Christian counseling. So I kind of take that role on myself. Sarah is a very, and she is the unit supervisor. She's there doing the data day activities, and she's extraordinary on how she works and interacts with the children. We do have someone that comes in and helps with the homework assistance and some of the key pieces that we need to help, again, keep as much normalcy in the life of these children. Again, I have the grandmothers, and I keep bringing that up because that is just so important to me. But the older solutions and remedies and nurturing and things that seniors bring to the table, you can't beat that, especially with my younger babies there. But a lot of my staff, they've all been trained per the state. So everybody has the necessary instruction and tutelage to do what needs to be done. But again, most of all, when I look at my staff, I'm looking at your ability to nurture. I'm looking at your ability to de-escalate situations when they become escalated by our youth. I'm looking for people who have a genuine concern about the well-being of the children. I know education, I know a lot of this stuff is so very important in what we do. But if you're not a nurturer, then this doesn't work for you. And so, again, that's my stance concerning the children. It's important to me.
Yeah. Sure. Arletta, what about your facility?
Yeah, I agree with Lisa.
And your staff?
I agree with her about the nurturing. It is, you know, that's one of the things we look at because you got to have people who are committed maybe coming in and being called a name that day because I'm angry. I don't know why I'm angry, you know, and we need someone who's going to respond back to them in a loving way, in an approaching way, in a coaching way to them. So we do have two social workers. I myself is one of them. I'm not there as much as I'd like to because I do teach in Mequon, but I do have an MSW and an LCSW that provides some of that clinical aspect of it. And the staff that works with us, they are required to come in with some knowledge and some experience besides the training that we give them. We do have a lot of ongoing training that's going on. They had one today because we have a child who has allergies. How do you do the EpiPen? How do you do some of these things, a medication? And even though they've had a basic cover of that, but going into a little bit more detail with one of the pediatric nurses that works with us and provide us with some support in that area. So, but I totally 100% agree that they got to have a nurturing behavior attitude towards kids because they're going to do things and they're going to, you know, they're hurt and you can't add on to that hurt. So that is one of the requirements. A staff cannot cuss in the house. They can't yell. And we do teach them on words to use when you're dealing with children in trauma. Instead of saying, what's wrong with you? What happened today? Listen to the side of the story. Be a good listener. Hear them out. You know, let their voice be heard. And then respond to them and ask them questions as they relate to how could you have done this differently. You know, teaching them about accountability and ownership. So
you both have placed yourselves right in the fire, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And it's a 24-hour-a-day demanding role. And a lot of people... a lot of parents who have children, especially who reach those adolescent years, fear them, and you're walking right into them with some very difficult situations that you're trying to calm. What do you do yourselves for your own sense of peace and respite during this time? You've both only been in it for a couple of months, but every day for several months dealing with a revolving door of unique children who have unique needs and circumstances. What do you do for yourselves to make sure you're playing a good role in their healing?
Well, I meditate. I start my day off at 3:30 in the morning, but I started off before God asking for direction, some leadership. You know, is it possible to get another kid? And what do I need to say? How do I need to handle this? And releasing to him the things that come along with running a business. It's not one of the easiest tasks, just maintaining staff and maintaining children and working with parents. So, you know, to taking care of myself, I have to meditate. I have to start that day off with that.
I'm going to ditto that. Only what you do for Christ will last. So prayerfully, we start each day asking God for guidance and then understanding and then that big word, patience.
I would imagine with a capital
yes.
P, right?
Yes. So when I'm done with all of that, there's this big hot tub sitting in my backyard. And
I love
lucky
it.
You. Yes. I need to come to your house.
Yes, yes, yes. So I find that time to just kind of melt away. Church on Sunday is very inspiring for me. It helps me, motivates me, and it gets me going and ready for that next day and that next week. So, yeah, I take good care of myself, I think.
Good. Mm-hmm. Is there a time that you can say to the county, you know, okay, we can see that the time for our clients, those that we have placed with us, is coming to an end? Can I reserve a week or two where I don't take any clients so that I have a chance to go on vacation or see my own family or do whatever the case might
be? When you have quality staff, you don't have to worry about
that. Right.
Your staff will cover. Your staff will. Yeah. Just an incident I had here with an ill sister, and I had to get out of here real quick and go deal with that. I was not concerned that things would go awry because when you have good people that you trust, and you trust them with the children, you can still do some of those things that you're talking about right now.
Right. I agree with Lisa. I think it's all about the, you know, the quality of your staff, the level of trust that you put in them, and it, everything works fine. And I believe both of us have really good staff and people that we trust, and we know that if we have to leave, things are, they're going to hold things down because they love what they do, and they love us, you know.
And now maybe you can clarify for me because I haven't asked this question. Is the facility in your own homes, or is your home separate from the facility that you're operating?
My facility is, well, I have foster children in my home, and then my shelter is a separate entity on its own.
So you do both?
Yep.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Arletta?
No, our, we turned our home into the shelter, but we do not have kids with us in our own home. My son is grown now, so. But we turned our home into the shelter.
So you're living in the shelter?
No, we're not. No. We actually are living in a different house because
By
state standards, we can't live there.
Okay. So. Good. Well, I would imagine that there is a need for other bridging the gap solutions in the county. If somebody were to say, I think this is speaking to me, I might want to endeavor to do what you're doing, what would be your advice for them?
Do their homework.
Pray. Right, do their homework and pray about it.
Yeah.
I mean, pray that God is leading you in that direction to do that.
This is a serious business because your hands are on the life of other people. And so you should never get into this arena for the love of money, but for the love of people. And sometimes you find, even in some of these adult situations, it's not about the individuals that you serve. It has to be a passion.
Right.
Passion-driven in order to take some of the things that we take through the process.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. I did all that with Lisa. You got to have that passion because it's going to be days when you go home crying. But you still got to get back up and say that, you know, you can do this. Or how can someone do this to their child? You got to be okay to actually work and look in that parent's face and say, you're going to be all right. You know, so I agree. You have to have that passion.
So there's an interesting common ground that both Arletta and Lisa have in the sense that they have shown their leadership in our Racine community for years. And it would be interesting to see what kind of community support they have received in as they've endeavored to provide this care for children. And at this time, Arletta has not been able to remain with us. So I'm going to direct that question to you, Lisa. Maybe you can answer for both of you.
Sure. The support has been wonderful in the city of Racine. There have been so many people that have reached out with baby clothing and all types of things that we need for the children because we are responsible for dressing and maintaining their day-to-day life. So people have been very gracious in the community. In the neighborhood where my facility is placed, when I first came and we started loading the furniture in the house, the neighbors started coming out and introducing themselves. And is there anything we can do? Do you want to do a housewarming? They were very warm and gentle people. There's always one. So this one guy asked me, he says, well, when you go before the city council, I'm going to tell them no. And I had to explain to them that we don't have to go to the city council. Our numbers are so that we need an occupancy permit from the city. And we've just been good neighbors, and I'm surrounded by good neighbors. The outreach, human service themselves as far as clothing, it's just been awesome.
Is there a role to play for the wider public to meet needs that you have not, that you still have to meet? Volunteers of any kind, other kinds of resources other than clothing that you might need? Is there a way that people might support what you're trying to do?
Sure. You can simply go to lisaslandoflove.com. It is our webpage. If there are things that you would like to donate, such as walkers and strollers, things for some of the smaller kids, the high school girls, yeah, they go through a lot of clothing and stuff too. Baby Pampers. I mean, we support ourselves. We do well. But for those who have a heart for the people and you really want to make a difference in the lives of these children, you can. We are gradually putting together our volunteer program. because our volunteers need to know what our staff knows as well. So there has to be a program put together. There are certain classes that our volunteers will need to take. I'm reaching out to students who are in the human service field that are looking for a place to do their internship, things of that nature. But again, the community has wrapped their arm around us. And again, for those of you that didn't even know we exist, we're here, and we're all about helping children.
What would a volunteer do at your place?
Well, I think if, especially with the smaller children, it would be some entertainment, maybe some arts and crafts, maybe rock a baby in the rocking chair, maybe watch a movie. We have a computer that the kids can get on and use and to do homework on. You might be excellent at math or want to do some homework assistance. All of those things will be laid out clearly once we finish the manual for our, but it's fun stuff that you would be doing with the children.
And I would imagine the training that they would take would be somewhat from the county and some from you as well?
Yes, it would.
And I would imagine that everybody goes through a criminal background check.
Be criminal background checked. Everybody must do foundation classes. Everyone must do a UA sample. We need to make sure that who's around and supporting our children. Never will a volunteer be left alone with the children. It will always be a volunteer and a staff working together to get the job done. So, yeah, there's protocol that needs to be done. But, again, if you're genuinely concerned about the needs of these children, then you would reach out.
We've covered a lot of ground this morning so far. I wondered if there's anything left that you'd have unsaid that you'd like people to know.
I would ask people to just open up your hearts and open up your homes to some children who really need a safe place to go. This program that the county is doing and reaching out and finding new parents, it's important. And it's also important that children are allowed to be in their culture. So there needs to be not one sect, but everybody needs to step up and become a foster parent if your heart is in it. To our African-American families, we need you. We need you. Our children need you. They need a safe place to stay, and it just might be you. Again, my motto, if I can help somebody as I travel on my way, then my living will not be in vain. And I'm hoping that there are some people out there listening that have that same approach to life and can open up their hearts and their homes to help these children.
Well, Lisa, I thank you for all the work that you're doing, and the same for Arletta. You've filled a huge void and need in our community, and I can only hope that others will follow your example. So thank you so much for spending the morning with me.
Thank you. You're welcome.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
Support comes from Hospice Alliance, presenting author Kimberly Paul's Live Well, Die Well Tour, Wednesday, August 7th at 5:30 p.m. at the Kenosha Women's Club. Her presentation is both engaging and funny and will bring you to see life and death in a different way. Admission is free.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, Apollo astronaut historian Jim Gibbons will discuss the space goal proposed by JFK in 1961 that was fulfilled for the U.S. in 1969. The program is free and will be held at Matheson Memorial Library in Elkhorn on Tuesday, August 6th at 6:30 p.m.
Jazz, swing, blues, bop, and more is available 24 hours a day on your desktop, laptop, smartphone, or radio. To access 24/7 Jazz WGTD on your computer, go to WGTD.org, where you can listen live, online, 24 hours a day. On your smartphone, download the free WGTD app. In the Kenosha Racine area, 24/7 Jazz WGTD HD2 is available via HD radio. For more information, call 262-564-3030.
Support comes from Kenosha Harbor Market, featuring Tony Gucciardo from Niriagi with handcrafted jewelry and, in the food realm, various fruit jams. The market is open Saturdays from 9 until 2 on 2nd Avenue and Plaza Duay.
Supporting WGTD is the Bristol Renaissance Fair, carrying you back to 16th century England with huge turkey legs, ale, wine, feasting, and nonstop entertainment on 13 stages and in the village streets. Open Saturdays and Sundays.